My name is Ralph White, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Ralph. And I'm the fill-in. I am the opening act. You got Amy tomorrow night. If you've not heard her, you are in for a treat. You got my sponsee brother Sunday morning, Peter M. If you have not heard him, you really are in for it. And then we got some people I haven't heard. I'm a speaker junkie. I'm a convention junkie. I'm one of the people, when you ask me to come out to a party, you ain't got to worry about me just dropping in, doing my thing, and leaving. I'll be here at 8 in the morning because I want to hear, you know, our guy with the H&I panel, and I'll sit through the Al-Anon, and I don't get enough of you guys. And it's been a while. You know, sometimes people will say, are you nervous? And I would give the correct answer, and, you know, yeah, I get nervous. But to be honest, no. Why is that? Why is that? You know, and it would seem, sitting out there like I was many times, ooh, if I ever got in front of people like that. I ain't trying to teach you nothing. I'm not going to say anything that's going to invite a lot of contention, because I'm going to talk about me. You argue with that if you want to. I'm going to talk about me. I'm going to do a couple of other things, too. And here's the reason why, if you get the opportunity to get up here, I'm going to give you a secret. They lie. That's why you ain't got to be worried. They lie. I don't care what I do. I could whistle Yankee Doodle, and you guys will say, ooh, Ralph, we love you. We love the. You lie, you know, so don't even worry about that. I don't even trust y'all when you be in the line, because I know you lie, and you tell me either. But if you knew, what is this guy doing up there? If you knew to our fellowship, you knew to Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to sincerely welcome you. If this is your first convention, and if you're new, more than likely, you've not been with us live very much. We are awesome in the squares, but you really want to hold hands with us in the circle. That's what you really want to do. Yeah. And I miss you. You know, I miss you. I've been out a couple of times, and in a way, it's kind of been good to sit down. I'm an older guy. You know, I know a lot of people get threatened by our events, the world we live in right now, what seems to be going on around us. I'm a guy that I don't really trip off that. You know, the I was a pandemic. Ask anybody who was in my life. We are pandemic. You know, why are we tripping? You know. We are pandemic, tsunami, pestilence, all road, and we tripping. What? You know, we built for this, you guys. We're built for this. Can you imagine having some event like this take place back when you were New Maryland back in the 70s? We wouldn't have been ready. Back when I was new, and we wouldn't have been ready. But in 2020, when the rest of the world was isolating, when the rest of the world was curling up, when the rest of the world was getting cabin fever, we thrived. You know, I've been reinvigorated. I've been rejuvenated. You know, I'm an old guy. I was not going to three meetings a day like I did in the early days. I was down to a couple of meetings a week in my commitments, you know, and in this age, I was going all over the world with you guys. I was on 3 and 4 meetings in my living room. I was staying connected, you know. I'm a third step guy, you guys. You know, I'm a third, whatever is in front of me. That's what people say in the third step. You know, well, what is God's will? God's will is what's going on. Now, my resistance to it might be different, but what's God's will? What's going on right now? how I see it, how I perceive it, how I respond to it. All that stuff seems to me to be a wrestle with, but what's going on is what's it, that's it. I'm going prefatory because I've been away from you guys for a while, so bear with me. I'm talking. Matter of fact, you know what? I think that's what I feel like doing tonight. Let's just have a conversation. You know, Todd, thank you, sir. Your imprint is all over this one. You know, you seem to be a man of high energy. We went to dinner. I appreciate that. You know, I always appreciate hospitality. You got a hell of a committee. You know, I'm doing spotlight work in Alcoholics Anonymous right now. You know, we are three legacy outfit. For those who are new, we use words that are not in your everyday walk around vocabulary. I know it. And we throw them around and expect you to know what they are. We get to talking about legacies. I don't be talking about legacies. There's three parts to our program, right? And the first part I fell into, I'm built for that unity. That's our fellowship, you know, and going to meetings. I love that. I'm a guy that if I have any gifts in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of them is I've loved you guys from the very beginning, you know. Not from the very beginning, because I bounced a couple of times, but from the time I came to stay. Right. But when I bounced, it wasn't because I didn't love stories in the meetings. I just didn't get into action. But I've loved you guys from the, because I like stories, you know, and you can't find better stories than the stories that you have in our rooms. What's not to like? I love going to meetings, you know. I love camaraderie. I love hope. You know, I respond to that. I respond to the love in the rooms. You know, I'm still a big fellowship guy. You know, I trip off people when they say, when people try to be slogan busters. You know, that's in vogue now. Slogan busters, 90 meetings and people, 90 meetings in 90 days. That ain't going to keep the meeting makers. And people scoff at those slogans. I don't believe anything is wasted in God's economy. You know, and I've gone through my phases. I used to talk about that 90 meetings a night. Hold up. Why are you busy busting slogans? You know what? Check this out. How many people like going to concerts? I like going to concerts. Now, you might think when you go see Janet Jackson or you go see, you know, Bruno Mars or you go see the Rolling Stones, you might think the act is the only thing that's taking place there. But before you go to the act, what do you have to do? You go to the back door and then you find somebody. We call them what? An usher. And they show us to our seat, right? And that usher is a very important person. They shine the light. It's usually dark. They walk you down to your seat and they seat you. And then when you're seated in your seat, now the Stones come out, or Adele, I shouldn't use Adele, she just canceled her residency, but whoever comes out, you know, but they come out and they perform. So the people who are up here saying, go to 90 meetings in 90 days, number one, why do I want to put a message in them that they may not have yet? I want to tell somebody how they need to be sharing. Maybe that's what they got in their arsenal, you know. Number two, you know what I look at them? That's the ushers. Quit tripping off the usher. What they're saying is, do new people go tonight? And when in sometime inside that 90th day, you might hear Georgia get up to the mic. Sometime inside that 90th day, you might hear Marion take the mic. Sometime inside that 90th day, you might hear my boy Peter take, and they will be virtual. So don't trip off the ushers. When you get to the mic, sing your song. Don't bash the ushers. You know what I'm saying? I'm that kind of guy. I just, so you guys, you see, what the hell is he talking about? You know, my sobriety date is October 11th, 1986. It don't make me authority on Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't make me an expert on the steps. Does not make me a spokesperson for Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a friend, and he says what it does make me is a satisfied customer. And I am an expert witness. And, you know, and if called on to testify, it makes me... I think it renders me an expert witness. And if called on to testify, I could and would competently testify to the following facts. You know, and I love this deal. I love this deal. I grew up in Watts in the 60s. You know, my old man was an alcoholic. I got five brothers. Six of us grew up in this little two-bedroom apartment in the heart of Watts. I had a mom who was a single mom. My old man was an alcoholic. She put him out when I was 8 or 9 years old. She starts raising six boys by herself. Still the greatest example of spiritual living that I know. As a kid, and this is, we tell stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're a storytelling society. And the reason we tell our stories is this. I've been with you guys 35 years. I'm 68 years old. I got to you at 33. I've been with you longer than I've been without you. You are the longest running personal relationship I have in my life outside of my biological family. And I find that I'm much better off when I'm with you. You hear people always talk about, he don't walk like he talk. No, I talk like I want to walk. I don't trip off that. Okay, he don't talk like he walk. Okay, I'll grant you that. But when I'm with you, I'm my very best. I'm my very best self. Because in life, I don't always present my highest and best self. In life, sometimes I bump heads with people. When I'm driving by myself, sometimes I get really depressed. You know, it's stuff that comes. But when I get with you, something seems to happen that don't happen without you. And I've been with you longer than I've been without you, but I didn't think that I would end up on this road. We're storytellers. And the reason we tell our stories, I came out of desperation. And if you knew, I pray you desperation. But I haven't been here 35 years out of desperation. I just have not. I can't find that same desperation I found in October of 86. You know, I came out of desperation. I've stayed out of inspiration. You inspire me. We get a lot of that information in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you go to enough meetings, you'll get a lot of information, but that's not the strength of our fellowship. That's not the glue. That's not what holds most of us for the long haul. Come for the information, stay for the transformation. Transformative stories. Man, transformation happens in here. It's not fashionable. When I was new, we used to talk about it more. We used to call them miracles. I believe in them. I'd like to tell you, hard guy, out of Watts, hope you know, I'm from a tough town, but I'm not a tough guy. And I believe in some stuff. And one, I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in this power, and I still believe in miracles. I just do. And so, because the transformation, and how do you see transformation? How do you talk about transformation? You know, they say a word, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words. And so we see transformation through our stories, not by coming up here and giving a seminar on how to do, no. And that's cool. I like workshops. I like doing those kind of needs too, but we see transformation. But I've called a couple of people when somebody gets up here. I got a point to Marilyn. When Marilyn Slater gets up here, I say, "What is that distinguished elder statesman lady? What is she doing up in here with us?" Then she gets to sharing her story. I'll be like, "Ooh, Marilyn, please don't you leave us." You know what I'm saying? The power of the power. And I see it best. Georgie, it's the same thing with you. What is that diva doing up in here? She needs to be on the cover of a magazine. Then she starts talking. I'd be like, ooh, she, Georgie, you more gangster than me. No, stop. You know, the power of the power. You know, I grew up in Watts, you know, and so I grew up, and my circumstance would have seemed to dictate that I would end up with you guys. My old man was an alcoholic. He got put out the house. I'm from a single family. None of those things make me alcoholic. You know, yeah, I'm a poor kid from the ghetto, you know, but look around the room. That obvious thing would make me alcoholic. I grew up without a dad in the house. There's people in here that grew up with both parents in the house. That obviously didn't make me alcoholic. I grew up with a dad who was alcoholic. Somebody in here grew up with parents that never took a drink. That obviously didn't make me an alcoholic. We grew up without no money. There's somebody in this room that grew up with a silver spoon. That obviously did not make me alcoholic. You know, it's some, you know, I'm a little guy. It's some big guys up in here. That didn't make me alcoholic. I'm alcoholic for two reasons. One, when I take one, I can't tell you when I'm going to stop. Two, when I sincerely don't want to put it in me and start it up again, I put it in me and start it up again anyway. I'm bodily and mentally different. That's it. That's all. The rest is my story. My story go a little bit like this. Every one of you had me in your classroom. I was always student body president, class president, straight A student, teacher's pet, play ball, made all stars. On the outside, I should have been okay. On the inside, I've always felt like if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. Yeah, I was teacher's pet. Yeah, I was straight A student. I would have traded it all in if I could have been cool. If I just could have been cool. Because in my neighborhood, it was a whole lot more currency placed on cool than on smart. The guys who were cool, they were in the bathroom smoking cigarettes, shooting dice, you know, taking quarters from guys like me that brought extra quarters with them. And they knew how to talk to girls, and girls were a mystery to me. I don't know why it was, fellas. You guys seemed like you had a handle on the manhood thing all along. 13 years old, talking about throwing down with girls already. I didn't know you were lying, but I was thinking to myself, how come I don't know? You know, took me a while to get comfortable telling my story in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because this is the first place I ever landed where folk try to out-bottom each other. And I don't, you know. And I wanted a penitentiary story, but I didn't want to go to the pen to get one, you know. And so, my story's my story. I'm a shy guy. I'm a square guy. I'm scared of girls. I'm 16. I ain't had a drink. Take my first drink at 16 years old, backseat of a buddy's car. You know, he was driving, older partner of mine, him and his girl in the front seat, me and my girl in the back. I actually had a girlfriend. I'd had other girlfriends before, but this one actually knew she was my girlfriend, right? And, plastic cup of rum and coke came to the backseat this particular night, drank it down real warm, respect to the top of my brain. All of a sudden, Ralph's hands started doing things they had never done. Mouth started saying things it had never said. I'd arrived. Alcohol did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Gave me the courage to do and to be and to say things I wouldn't do, be and say without it, and I liked it. I liked it a lot, but I didn't start drinking like that. You know, I know for a lot of you guys, I hear your stories. You took that first drink, magical, mystical, transcendent, I'm drinking for the rest of my life. Didn't happen like that for me. That night I drank, I got a warm, tipsy feeling, kissed and licked and sucked on my girl in some places I had never done before, and that's how my drinking stayed. You know. I would drink to go out on the weekends and party. You know, and this is 11th grade. I drank some in high school, but when I graduated in 71, and I graduated and I went off to school, not too far from home, but it seemed like it was a continent away. You know, I was on my own. I'm 18 years old. I'm living in the dorms at UCLA. You know, I'm that stupid grown that an 18-year-old thinks he's grown, right? I'll eat cake for dinner if I want to. That kind of grown, right? But I'm living in the dorms, man, and it was just big. I'm not one that got in the game, you guys, in the drinking game, because it made me somebody other than who I was. I always used to think, inside of my shyness, inside of it, because I was very introverted. I've always been very self-aware. I remember being in elementary school, and I was walking down the hall one day. So if I'm in elementary school, I couldn't have been more in the sixth grade. I might have been junior high. I can't remember. I was walking down the hall, and I'm kind of nerdy. I'm square, and back in my neighborhood, guys had a certain swagger, you know, they pimping their walk. And I remember changing my walk up, Doug, because I wanted to have that walk. Because I might be on candid camera. What? People of a certain age remember candid camera, right? It's kind of like the video stuff they show now, but that was the earlier. I might be on. That was a real thought. That somewhere on 100 at 109th Street Elementary School, Ralph White is discovered. Shy, introverted, knowing I'm invisible. I heard a speaker share one time, you guys, you know, if you treat me special, I feel. In fact, I heard Clancy say that on an early tape. I was listening to him not too long, and he didn't say exactly this like this other speaker said. He said a couple of little, but he said, if you treat me special, I feel normal. If you treat me normal, I feel rejected. I recognize that the first time. For whatever reason, now it comes across as if it's this massive ego, but it's so, you know, I'm invisible if I'm just part, I gotta stand out. And that defect of character, when you get to 7 and you wonder why the wording is, you know, take away every defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness. When you get to that one, when you look back on your life's experience, it'll get to be clear. Because that particular defect served me very well. It's why I'm a high achiever. It's why I was always top of my class. It's why I've done much of what I've done. I've also perverted that. that same instinct, you know. So it has also not served me well. Depends on the, but I was a hard driver, and I'm a guy that always thought I would leave footprints. You know, that's why we tell our stories, you guys. There are as many different portraits of the alcoholic as there are alcoholics. I suffer from a couple of things that I suspect a couple of you guys suffer from too, and it's kind of fatal in sponsorship. You know, one of them is this. I think if it's not my experience, you're lying about it being yours. So it has not been my experience that it's hard to go to meetings. So sometime when I got a sponsee that just don't, sometimes that's a blind spot for me. No, you lying, or you lazy, or you just won't do. No, they're not built like you, Ralph. Everybody don't find us interesting. Some people find us intimidating, and some of you got stories. So that's one of mine. If it's not my experience, you're lying about it being yours. And here's the other companion piece to that. You know, if it's my experience, it's the experience. So a lot of people share their experience with that. I hear people when they get to the point sometime, and it's good friends of mine too. And sometimes I have to reel myself in and say, Ralph, that's their experience. And because a lot of my friends, you might hear some of them this weekend say, when they stopped drinking, things got worse for them. And I would always bristle sometime at that. I have friends, some of my tightest friends, said 11 months sober, I wanted to commit suicide because it changed. I never had that experience. So be mindful of that, you guys. Blind spots in sponsorship. But anyway, so I'm at this school, man, and for a lot of people, my point was, when I was way back making a point, was when I started drinking, it didn't make me somebody other than what I was. It didn't make me want to be. I've always suspected that you guys were being deprived of the real Ralph White. He's tied up in this, and I can't, you know. Sometimes you talk about getting your authentic voice and being your authentic self, guys. And I'm 68 right now, and I thought if I did enough fourth and fifths, if I didn't need a knee and eye to eye and enough nine steps, if I went to God enough on this on these defects of character, you know, that shyness, that fear of what I think you think about me, which is my overriding fear. It drives all the other fears, right? And if I do enough of that 11 step throughout the day, God, that somehow this other guy is going. And the reality is, at 68, there is a level of social awkwardness that might be part of Ralph White's authentic self. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I stopped looking and tripping off that. I've come into embracing who it is that he is, you know, because I used to think, you know, that you guys would be in there. But what seemed to happen when I discovered the elixir was I was able to interact like other folk. I thought recovery would unlock. It has not unlocked that same level of recklessness, I guess. You know what I'm saying? It has not, but for me, it has freed me to be me. It's freed me to be me, just who I am. I got some social awkwardness to me. You know, I'm not, you know, Pete, I always talk about Pete. I'm not going to be GQ like Pete. You know, I'm you know, I'm an acquired taste, you know, in all areas. I'm moody sometimes, you know, so I'm 18 years old, you guys, and I'm at this school, and I like to say my alcoholism was organic, right? It wasn't considered. I didn't say I'm drinking for the rest of my life. It's the 70s. I'm 18. I'm running with a fast crowd. I got life by the tail. I'm a young guy, first kid off my block to go to college. I'm accustomed to having pats on the back. I'm accustomed to trailblazing. I'm accustomed to being a guy in the spot. I'm accustomed to, and I'm thinking by the time I'm 30, you know, and the book describes me in lots of places, you know, but when I start started drinking, man. Even though I started late, I took to it. You know, and I started with what youngsters drink. Annie Greenstreams, Boone's Farm, Tyrolia, Spinata, Akadama, you know, Brass Monkey, Southern Comfort. That was my drink when I'm mixing drink. You know, I'm drinking what youngsters drink, you know. And when you, if you go to UCLA, you pick up three majors in addition to your declared major if you live in the dorms. One is you got to start drinking. Two, you got to smoke commercial weed. And three, you play beer whiz all night long. I excelled at those last three. Not so much in my declared major, right? You know, so by the mid-70s, right, you know, stuff starts happening for me. And I start thinking, when I grow up, I'm going to outgrow this foolishness. I'm described in our chapter there as a solutionist. What about the real alcoholic? This is the person that's more or less insane all the time. What about, that's me. But right before me is another description of my boys. I thought I was in the other description. Then there's the hard drinker, you know, the heavy drinker, given a sufficient reason to stop or moderate. We started, they graduated from school. My boys started going to grad school. They started starting families. They started getting careers, and they did. They slowed it down. You know, I thought I'd be like that. I didn't know I got that thing. If you put me right next to them, we look alike. But I got that thing, and that thing is growing in me. It don't show up on a CAT scan. It won't show up on an MRI. It won't show up on an X-ray. It won't even show up on your urinalysis. Hold up, dude. I've been pulled over for drunk driving. Blood alcohol was in my urine. Yeah, blood alcohol, but not alcoholism. Won't show up in your urinalysis. And I got that thing, and I don't know it. And I'm just going on about my business thinking, and I start suffering some losses in the 70s. I have a college sweetheart. We get together. We have big dreams, goals, hopes, ambitions. She meet me when I'm the other guy. She meet me when I'm the cucumber, you know, and I'm a good guy. I'm a catch. I'm the guy that you want to take home to mom. You know, I'm the one that when you go home with Doug, the girl, if you take Doug home, I'm the one that they tell you, why are you fooling with Doug? Why don't you get with that nice boy, Ralph? You know, I'm here. Because I'm yes, sir, yes, ma'am. I'm very vulnerable. I'm very well behaved. And I got a bright future. And I'm the guy that's described as the one that builds up this structure. And I keep tearing it down by the senseless series of spree. I'm the tear down guy. You know, so me and this girl, we get together. My college sweetheart, she's a year behind me. And my thing is growing. We get married in 1980 on a Saturday afternoon in April. By 1980, the wheels are off. Couple of descriptions of the invisible line in our big book. One of them is, you know, when alcohol ceased to be a luxury and became a necessity. And the other one is, you know, when I got in the region from which it's no return through human, I've been living in that region for a long time. That had been my address for a while before I knew it, you know. And so in 80, it was already bad. I didn't get to you guys till 86, but in 80, it was already bad. We go down the aisle on a Saturday afternoon. I have a bachelor party the night before my wedding. None of the guys at the bachelor party are getting married the next day. They all go home at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm still at my bachelor party till 7:30 in the morning, me and my brothers. Take me home at 7:30, pour me in bed, get me up at 10 o'clock for 1 o'clock wedding. I'm tore up, you know. Supposed to say my own vows at this wedding. Apparently, when I showed up, the stagger was so severe that my then wife-to-be took one look at me and looked at the preacher, said, scratch the own vows. Say the regular on him, right? We get into the ceremony. I get ready to say I do. I say, and threw up all over. Passed out. Have not taken a wedding picture to this day. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And you know the cold thing about that story, and I've been telling it for a whole lot of years. You know, I get to go out. I've been going out talking for a while, and I tell it for a whole lot. And every now and then, the enormity of it hits me. And since I haven't been going out that much, and on Zoom, I've been talking every now and then. You know what? Because ladies, for most of you, I don't see Julia Roberts in here or Meryl Streep. So for most of you, you have one day, maybe two, when you walk the red carpet. queen for a day, all eyes on me. And that day, that young lady made the mistake of hitching her wagon to a drunk like me. And guys like me, we're heartbreakers. I'm not gangster. You know, I'm not a hard guy. If I was a hard guy, I would have been met on Mary because she could have made a conscious decision. I'm going to be Bonnie to your Clyde. I'm going to ride or die with you to the penitentiary, all that. But I'm not that guy. I'm the guy that peeks up every now and then as the husband that you thought you were marrying. Every now and then, I would come back up and surface, man. We got married in 1980. We had a daughter in 1983. You know, in 84, I can remember Christmas in 84. We were almost, I had almost burned us to the ground at that time. And Mary had one last gasp attempt. And we went to Dallas, Texas. Two of our best friends from college were living in Dallas, Austin, Texas. We went to Austin in for 10 days over Christmas in 1984. And my daughter was about 1 and a half, and they had a daughter the same age. And we went to Austin, you guys, and over those 10 days, we had dinner. We went out and ate at a couple of restaurants. We drank wine at dinner. We drank some mixed drinks at the house. We smoked a couple of joints. Ralph never disappeared. Ralph never showed his ass. Everything, you know, it was a great time. It was a great time that December in 84. It snowed in Austin, Texas that year. There's a picture that's a favorite picture of me and my little girl. We were walking in the snow holding hands, and my left foot was up and her left foot was at the same. Favorite picture. Just a memory. Kodak. And Mary said, he's back. I'm thinking, he's back. And we landed at LAX, and my brother knocked on my door when we got home, and he's back. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, the wrong one was back. And I ain't gonna bore you with the details because I didn't have I had some big stuff happen. I came home, dude sitting in my seat with a gun pointed at my stomach talking about I want my money. I got calls at work from my wife talking about there's a guy here demanding money. You know, if you grew up if any of you guys grew up in the 80s, youngsters, you don't know about this. But when utilities used to get cut off, you couldn't just go on the computer and pay online. You know, if you got home at 5 o'clock, and the gas or the lights or the water or the phone, notice I name every utility. I'm familiar with all of them. If one of them was off, you got to go the next day to the utility company. Caveat, unless you Ralph, you don't go the next day because you ain't got the money. You got to wait till payday. And you got to go about 6 days, 8 days, no gas, no lights, no water, no phone, whatever it was, get comfortable with that kind of living. Get comfortable with seeing the landlord every month, because I'm not going to see him, and you got to have a story for him. Get comfortable on Thanksgiving and Christmas showing up at my mom or your mom with an excuse why Ralph ain't here again. Get comfortable going to the office Christmas party without your husband with an excuse again. Get comfortable with that kind of. So it was big stuff, man, but it was the grind. When you were a guy like me, it's that grind. It's that grimy. And I went in the purse one too many times and came home one day and note was on the screen door. I had been gone about 3 days. The rest of your stuff is at your mom's house. Suitcase on the porch, put out my house, went to stay at my mom's house. This is 85. My five brothers got put out of their respective homes. All of us ended up in my mom's house and we damn near killed her. My mom had to come home every single day with a bag of groceries, because if she kept food in the refrigerator, these 6 grown leeches that she gave birth to would have been making plates and selling them for what we needed. That's how I was getting down, man. You know, and I'm so glad God don't make misery comfortable. And on October, the night of October the 10th, some stuff went down. culminated in me dodging a black truck the morning of October 11th, 1986. It was a Saturday. And I dodged this black truck 5 blocks back to my mom's house, and I knocked on her back door. And I said, "Mom, if you let me in the house, I promise I'm going in the recovery program where Ronnie is." My brother Ron had been in the Harbor Light Center on Skid Row for about 80 days. And my word didn't mean anything. So I had to do something to substantiate this lie. So we found the yellow pages, and we flipped through, and we found the phone number to the Harbor Light and called up there, and they located Ronnie, paged him on the phone, located him, and I got him on. I said, "Ron, tell Mom you got a bed for me." Ronnie got excited. "I'm sure we can have a bed for you." That was on a Saturday, you guys. For years, I've been saying, you know, I got here what seemed to be a flimsy reed. This lie I'm telling my mom. If you let me in the house, I promise I'll go in the program. And it hit me. I didn't get here on a lie I was telling my mom. I got here on a lie I thought I was formulating. God had different plans. Because I told my mom, if you let me stay in the house, she let me stay in the house. I promise I'll go in the program. And I went up in the program. And when I went up in the program, they introduced me to you. There's an art to listening in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's an art to listening to our stories. You know, I liken it to going to a concert. And that's kind of a good analogy, you know, because sometime when you're at a meeting, you know, I hear people say all the time, it's no bad speakers. Well, I'm a bad listener, you know, so I'm guilty, you know, because sometime I'd be like, what the hell was he talking? You know, I got a partner of mine, Carl, and Carl said he was at a meeting with his sponsee brothers, and they made the mistake of sitting next to the sponsor. And one of them, they were at a speaker meeting, and one of them said to the other one, "Man, that speaker ain't talking about nothing. Man, what is he?" And the sponsor leaned over to him and looked at him and said, "Maybe he ain't talking to you. You mean there's somebody else here besides me?" Yeah, Mr. Self-Centered. So, yeah, it is. You know how you go at a meeting and you be like, "Man, that speaker," and you be in the speaker line because you got the right etiquette, and you go to shake the speaker's hand. And the person in front of you is saying, "Man, you told my story." I'd be like, "Man, don't be encouraging him." You know what I'm saying? I still don't. But going to a meeting, you guys, it's almost like going to a concert, but it's a little different. Because at a concert, we don't mix genres. You know what I'm saying? You don't have, you wouldn't have Garth Brooks and Snoop Dogg. You don't mix them like that. But at a meeting, you do. At a meeting, you do. So when I sit down at a meeting, you know, the way I get through a meeting, you guys, and what works for me, I listen, and a guy is up there, and I'll be like, and some people are like getting into it, and I'll be like, "What the hell? Okay, that's rap. I'm an old guy. I'm not really with, you know, oh, then somebody else is up there and I'm not hearing it. Oh, that's country western. Okay. Then somebody else is up there and a few people are getting, I'm like, ooh, that's opera. You know, and okay. And then somebody's up there and they're doing some, and I'm into it. Okay, that's R&B. That's old school. That's, you know. And then you get somebody up there and everybody is like, damn. And then, you know, transcendent. Michael Jackson, Barbara Streisand, like that. You know, and so a meeting is like that. So sometime when I'm not feeling the speaker, I'm throwing this out for those of you who ain't feeling me, then, you know, just be like, oh, he, you know, that's country western or that, whatever your thing and it ain't, that's what I am. You know what I'm saying? You know, and that's how I get through. But so that's the thing about going to meetings. And it's an interesting thing. It's an art to listening. And because all our stories at the front end, if we're really telling our stories, some of them at the front end, they're very different. Some of them are exciting, like hard rock. You know, some of them are dramatic. Oh, my God. Some of them are cliffhangers. Some of them are kind of mundane. You know, some of them are maybe to me. My story is kind of running, you know, but so the front end is different. But all of us hit the refrain, all of us hit the chorus. Thrill is gone. Ain't no sunshine. You know, we hit that blues part, and that blues up for some of us it'd be a long time. Some of us is short, but we all hit that. Then we hit my favorite part, the sweet spot. In our literature, we call that because we share what we used to be like. We say, "What happened?" Knock on the board, police. Now, to you, when it's happening to you, you don't get excited. I get excited when you share that in your story. My wife put me out. Job fired me. Police came and got me. Judge gave me one. You know, we get excited after what happened because we know what's getting ready to happen next. You're getting ready to find us. And see, I'm a sucker for a happy ending. I know what's going to happen when you find us. So I listen for the what happened. I listen for the sweet spot, you know. And I know you guys' stories. I hear them. I like when Peter talks about his dad finding him, coming out in the morning looking for his son. I like those stories. Toe up, beat down. How dark it is before the dawn. We know what's getting ready to happen. You're getting ready to find us. Oh my God! And when I found you that October in 86, 33 years old, and I thought life was over for me. You know, I was a 33-year-old man. I had been, you know, I was on a panel with a guy some years back, Tom I. Tom I at that time had, I think, 54, 55 years sober. And we were doing a Q&A. And they asked Tom, in your 55 years, what has been the most important thing that you found for you in, that's seen you through for 55 years in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I expected Tom to say something flowery. And he's a big H&I guy. You know, I expected him, conscious contact with someone. And he said one word. He said enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. Think about it. In Bill's story, he came out to shoot with that. My wife and I enthusiastically set ourselves out to, you know, to looking for drunks that we can, you know, when we went to dinner, which that's what struck me. God damn it, old timer sitting up in here. If it's supposed to be a program of attraction, make it attractive. Don't be sitting up in here, there ain't no easier. So, no, this is the easiest off the way. This is it. You know, if we wasn't having fun in here, you'd have a different speaker. I'm dead serious about recovery, but I'm seldom serious in recovery. If you ain't laughing in this program, you ain't taking this program serious enough. So I got here, I was struck with that, man. I was struck with that because I came from a, you know, I was never homeless because I got a mom. And I got a mom that some folk, and I'm grateful for what I have. Some folk would say you didn't do it right. You enabled. You did. My mom did what she did. And it's four of her sons here now. And that's another one of the things when I work with folk, and you do what you do. You know, there ain't no one size fits all in the spiritual realm. You know, sometime, and I'm not trying to step on the Al-Anon's toes because I'm not in there and I'm not doing an Al-Anon talk, but, you know, I talk to mothers, you know, and sometimes folk be beating them up. Why you let him up? And sometimes it is, you got to go. You can't, because the cold thing about it, when my stepson was doing, no. If it's anybody going to be drinking on somebody, it's going to be me. I ain't going to get drank on. You can't come up here. We got the least, oh my God, but my mom, you know, and she had a nervous breakdown in 85. We thought we lost her. So I came to you guys, man, and 86, 33 years old, broken. I'm not the one that you can scare in the recovery. I like the skit. I want to really give a shout out to the people that were in the skit, too. You know me. I just be, and then I be, you can't do nothing in AA because somebody going to be out there. Well, why they do? You know, I have one thing. I was like, why did the dude put the old timer on row two? He put his ass on the front row. You know, see that, see? but I love the skit. You know, I love the skit. Because you can't, you know, and they were talking about, you can't scare me in the recovery. You know, when I got here, man, I was 33 years old, and it had been a long time since I'd answered anybody's 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock wake-up call to go to work. I didn't know where my little girl was enrolled in school, and I didn't know where my family was living. I hadn't been... I was so far down, the thought of getting up didn't even come to mind. You know, I used to hear people say, damn, because what I used to think of as my heyday, people used to look at me and then be like, damn, Ralph, ain't you scared of overdose? I'm like, scared of overdose? I'm scared of deadly underdose. You better put some more up on here. So you can't scare an alcoholic of my variety, you know. The message that got me, and it is gotten a lot more fashionable these days. Everybody knows to talk about message that's got to have depth and that's got to have weight. And so people really get concerned with going and being able to quote the page numbers. But you know the message, the depth and weight to me that you guys carried that was the most powerful and the strongest. I saw you. So I came in here, man. The first step was not difficult for me at all. I'm not a guy that surrenders. I'm not a surrendering guy. Like I say, men of a certain age, we come from, you don't give up, you don't quit, you know, quitters. So I don't surrender. I was surrendered. And that's the best thing for a guy like me. Because a couple of times I came in and I thought I gave up. Because I said, okay, I give. But the regenerative nature of my ego is such that, you know, so when I came in 86, I didn't say I nothing. Alcohol said it for me. No, dude. So I came in, man, pretty badly mangled. Help me. 33, help me, you know, and so I suspected that there was something physically different about me. You know, I thought that I had it confused that the body difference. I thought the reason that I drank so much was because I had high capacity. No. Let's sit you down. You know, it's something bodily and physically different about you, and we want you to look at it for yourself. How many times did you say, I'm just going to spend 20? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you say, I'm going to just stop off at happy hour? What happened? Whole paycheck. How many times did you say, I'm going to stop off over here at my boy's house for a minute? What happened? Whole paycheck. Ralph, did it happen once? Did it happen twice? If your name is Ralph, every 2 weeks from 1979 to 1985, whole paycheck. My experience, not yours, not my sponsor, not the oldest old timer in the room, my experience abundantly confirms for me when I take one anything, no matter where I have to go, what I have to do, who I have to see, no matter how great the wish or the necessity, my body takes over, got to have another. Okay, smart guy, if it's just your body, how do you explain stone sober my car seemed to drive to the LIQ on payday? Second part is disease, the obsession, the idea that somehow, someday, I'm going to be able to control and enjoy this magic potion. All you guys know about that one. Where the hell is that coming from anyway? Anytime I'm controlling, I ain't enjoying. Anytime I'm enjoying, I damn sure ain't controlling. Why am I stuck on controlling and enjoy? I can't drink because of my body. I can't not because my mind refuses to accept that fact. I'm powerless, you know. And so it talks about then this spiritual malady, and you guys want to propel me into that. That I admitted that I got a problem. I sure was not interested in your solution. I love when it talks in that chapter, but you know, to be doomed to die an alcoholic death or to live life on a spiritual basis are not always easy. But that's me. Because I grew up in church. I grew up in Baptist church. A little bit different than Catholic church. And some Catholic church is a real awe-inspiring service. And is, you know, it's majestic and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of quiet and it's up, down, and quiet. Baptist church, high energy, loud. At a certain point in the proceedings, you know, apparently, and they've said this, the Holy Ghost goes through the church and people are, you know, might jump up. I remember being 8 years old, sitting next to my mom, and I was looking at her out the side, thinking, you better not jump up in here and embarrass me. She's putting food on the table. She's taking care of me and my brothers. She's doing all this stuff. And I'm like, and my mom was a domestic in the 60s. She was on welfare in the 60s. She went back to high school. She went back to junior college of trade tech. She went back to Cal State LA. She graduated the same year as my brother, mine. She went into a long and distinguished career in the insurance industry. She retired with a whole bunch of accolades. I've never seen anybody like my mama. Spiritual to me. But I see through my eyes. I'm selfish, self-centered. Oh, and I'm looking at her like, you better not jump up in here and embarrass me. You know, so I'm in church. I was raised in church under duress. Said I'll never go and darken the doors of anybody's church when I get to be 16. Said it, did it, meant it. They were just telling stories. You might as well have been talking about Jack and the Beans, like Aesop's Fables. You know, Daniel and the Lion's Den. And then parting the Red Sea and the rest. And I used to scoff at that. So when I came to you guys, I came as the scoffer, the cynic, the skeptic. You gave me another name. You called me agnostic, and you sent me to a chapter. And when I was in that chapter, some remarkable things started happening. Because the very things I used to talk, I still talk about them. And I still say them now, but I say them in a whole different way. Because I stumbled up on something without knowing it. I stumbled up on it thinking that I was debunking this spiritual book, you know, oh, these are just stories. They are stories. When you think about it, isn't that the language of spirituality? That's why that's what we do best. You don't approach spiritual matters, you know. I love when, you know, you don't approach it. I was listening to Howard today, Howard P. on a thing, and he's, you know, he and Marilyn, they both are very scientific people and the rest. And so I love it when I hear that from them, you know. And you don't approach spiritual matters the same way as you do theory, hypothesis, conclude. You don't approach spiritual matters that way. You approach them by stories, storytelling. That's what we do best, you know, because Daniel and the Lions, then Ralph, quit being a literal guy, because you're a literal guy because you do it because you ain't really interested in learning nothing. You interested in waiting for the pause so you could jump in and rebut. That's what you do. You know, you don't construct, you rebut, you tear down, you do, you know. And so I came in here, man, but isn't that what spiritual language is? Daniel and the Lions, then, don't trip off that. That ain't the story. The story ain't whether or not it was somebody standing facing down lines. The story is this, Mr. Smart Guy. When you find yourself in a situation that you can't get out of, there's a power you can call on. There is a power that'll work in your life when you don't see no way out. It'll do for you. Look at your track record. Have you been Daniel in a lion's den? If you can't see your way to the other side of a situation, you might be sitting in a situation right now that you can't see your way out of. You can't think your way out of. You can't reason your way out of. You think every night, you go in your meditation, you do it all, you talk to your sponsor, you do some writing and the rest, and it still feels like, damn, it just ain't no way out of this one. That if you call on this power, he'll seemingly make a way, just like parting the Red Sea and seeing you to the other side. He'll make a way out. Have you had a Red Sea parted in your life? I've had many. This business of seeking God in the second step, this business of coming to believe, this business of God could and would if he was sought. Sometimes I think I make a little bit too much of it. This business of, okay, Ralph, this coming to believe deal, you give it legs when you see, if it's any, how many people in here in their first year? We got any people in their first year? Oh, I'm so glad to see that. Of those people that are in your first year, do we have any people coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous that have been here before? Okay, so I know you. I see you. I see you. You might be sitting out there and you might be thinking to yourself, I've given you guys a try and I found you wanting. I've given you guys a try and it has not worked for me. I sat up in here on the island of misfit toys and I'm a misfit with the misfits. Is there any hope for me? I've already given it my best shot. It ain't, I'm different. You know, it's a cold thing to be in a place full of people who admit that they don't do nothing but screw up their life, and I'm screwing up with the screw up. What is it, any hope for me? You know, I see you. I see you. I see you. I'm going to invite you to do one thing for me. Those of you who are coming back, to use newcomers, I want you to come all the way in. Sit all the way down. Do what we do. Come all the way in. Sit all the way down. And and do what we do. I know it feels like I've been here before. I think it's, I liken it to a gym membership. And I've had membership in the gym. And I go to the gym every day. And I know all of you guys when you come in there. I call you by name. I give you a towel. I spot you on the machines. I say, Peter, give me one more. Give me one more, Pete. And I show up every day. After 30 days, Pete is leaving and he's a little bit slimmer. And I see Marion over there on her machine. Come on, Marion. I know you. Come on, baby. You can do it. And after 60 days, Marion's going out of there. I'm getting fatter meanwhile and I'm getting surlier because I'm wondering, why are they looking better? Why is something happening for them and ain't nothing happening for me? And after 90 days, I leave the gym with a gym membership, knowing everybody in the gym. After 90 days, I ain't done a push-up, pull-up, sit-up, no-up. I ain't got on a machine. I ain't done nothing. I've been in the gym. I have not done anything that they do in the gym. I've been visiting the gym and I've had a membership. You know, and we got a broad third tradition that gives you membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only requirement for membership, you ain't got to pay a gym membership. The only requirement for membership in this camp is a desire to stop drinking. If you have a desire, can't nobody put you out. You ain't got a tryout. You ain't got an audition. You made it. Trials are over. You made it. You know, and everybody in here would agree that is a very broad umbrella, and that's a wonderful thing. You know, only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Wow, that's great. But check this out. Everybody that's on the team ain't in the game. Put me in the game. Put me in the game. Oh, Mr. Speaker, what the hell are you talking about? Put me in the game. What does that look like and what does that mean? That's the same thing. Come all the way in, sit all the way. See, I play ball, you know, and when I play ball, I don't play ball to get a participation draw. No, I want to be in. I'm not sitting up there. Now, don't get me wrong. We need fans. We need spectators. We need haters. We can even need commentators on the game to make them think that puts them in. But put me in the goddamn game. Dudes, I can't even do strip clubs because I don't like looking. Put me in. Put me in. You know. I'm an all-in guy. And I jumped in. So how do I get in the game? How do I, in Alcoholics Anonymous, how do I come all the way in and sit all the way down? See, it's some things. You got to stick around here. One of the meetings by you go to 90 meetings a night. You got to go to a lot of meetings. You got to exercise. You know, it's some muscle memory involved. It's some spiritual muscle memory involved, too. It's some muscle memory involved in going and taking your same seat at the same bar every day. It's some muscle memory involved in knowing what go in this drink. No. That ain't strong. It's some muscle memory involved in being in the game and being in the life and knowing who it is that's the trick in the world. It's a muscle memory involved. It's a muscle memory involved in this too. And so I come around here and some things I got to learn, the lay of the land. And I got to learn it's some different stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of you guys be trying to give somebody surrender and be trying to talk them into, man, don't you see what you're doing to that little girl? We call that frothy emotional appeal. You don't never reach, no. That is not how you get surrender. Surrender is not through the mind. Surrender is through the behind. When that behind is, ears open, mouth closes. You're anatomical. It's some anatomical action to you. When that behind is hit, the ears open, mouth closes. The thing about it, you know, when my behind starts healing, my mouth starts running, my ears start closing. Thank God I was tenderized well enough, long enough. So in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of anatomical stuff that don't make sense. You don't appeal to the mind. You know, where does recovery reside? In your feet. Disease centers in my thinking. Recovery, we train our feet. Huh? Y'all do everything back. So how do I sit all the way down? I sit all the way down getting on my knees. That's how you sit all the way down in Alcoholics Anonymous. I say, God, do something with your boy. I offer myself to you to do something with me. You know, and a lot of people, I don't know when I get in my third step whether or not I'm walking in God's will or whether or not I'm walking away from Ralph's will. It really don't matter, but I got to be doing one of them. And for me, when I first got on my knees in that third step, I didn't know what I was walking to, but I knew what I was walking away from. If you brand new up in here, and if you come in coming back. I can't guarantee you what's going to happen if you take this walk with us. I can't tell you whether or not you're going to get the kids back in your life. I can't tell you whether or not he or she is going to come back. I can't promise you a happy marriage. We can't promise you a hell of a career. We can't promise you a bunch of money. We can't guarantee you that you're going to have a big house. But me and you can both guarantee you what's going to happen if you don't give us a try. I took a chance on Alcoholics Anonymous. I took a chance. I took a chance, and I got on my knees, and I said, God, I offer myself to you. Do something with your boy. Relieve me. Pivot point. Here's the bait and switch in alcoholics. I didn't see it coming. I thought I was coming here just to get the gorilla off my back, and I thought when I got on my knees, I would say something. Relieve me of this terrible thirst for beverage alcohol. Relieve me of this insatiable desire to keep getting loaded. Relieve me of this, but something else came out of my mouth. Relieve me of the bondage of wait a minute, when did we get into that whole deal? It's the whole deal. That's the whole thing. It's too much me. When we talk about this spiritual experience, when we talk about this God of mine, it's too much me between me and the power. It's a real simple equation. Grow God, shrink Ralph. Whole deal. That's what the rest of the steps are designed to do. This ego's reducing series of activity. That's what the rest of them are designed to do. And when that happens in my life, you guys, I ain't got enough time. I've been going on all over on riffs and stuff, and my time is running out. I didn't have too good a time with you guys. But what happens when I end up getting on my knees and I get off my knees and I give legs to that third step and I go into that sex conduct inventory, resentment inventory, fear inventory. I look at it and I do something I said I wasn't going to do. I sit up here and I tell another person, admit it to God. Some people say, ain't it enough to God? I'm not embarrassed in front of God. I don't look at God. What embarrasses me is me looking at you. That's what holds me in bondage. And I did it. I did it. Got on my knees, man, and the rest of this process, 6 and 8, 9, got in and ended up, man, what ends up happening when I go face them people and give them not my money, but their money? What happens when I go face those people? Something starts happening in that process. I get a new address. We call it the realm of the spirit. We call it here. I get rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. You ain't got to go if you're in a big book workshop or something. You ain't got to send a dictionary person to look up what does fourth dimension look like. I don't know what it looked like for you. I'm going to give you a glimpse of what it looked like for me. Last night, I was on a Zoom call. 27. I can't believe I'm getting it out of here, too. 27-year-old. My daughter turned 27 yesterday. She was in Atlanta, Georgia, with some of her girlfriends. My best work. And if I hadn't met you, the world wouldn't even know River White. Never seen her daddy loaded one day at a time. She never will. Every now and then, some of that stuff just hits me, the enormity of it. The world would not know her. We think we just came here for us. We think this room is just filled with us. If you look real close, every time I go to a meeting, if you look real close, it's some other folks sitting in here with us. Because see, it's some little boys and it's some little girls that's going to have a mama and a daddy show up at parent-teacher conferences just because of coming to a meeting. Imagine that, living in the fourth dimension. My daughter, who was 2.5 years old when I got sober, whose piggy bank I was going in, she's 38. She's a practicing attorney. When she walked down the aisle 10 years ago, she was accompanied by her daddy. That's living in the fourth dimension. I've been in the delivery room when my own daughter hit this earth. I've been in the delivery room for 2 of my grandsons when they came. You talk about fourth dimension. Next week, on Tuesday, that mom who we almost lost in 1985, her son started coming to you in 1986. It's 4 of us with you. She'll be 92 years old. She's still here as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you thought the gorilla, I thought the gorilla was just leaving me. My mama's still here. You'll never hear Ralph White say, I don't know why I'm sober. I know exactly why I'm sober. I get a blessing so that I can be a blessing. Recovery for me is a gift from God. What I do with my recovery, that's my gift to God. My name is Ralph White. I am an alcoholic.